that, like, there's not one person that I think is like the perfect product marketer that can be amazing and execute in all of the different areas that you need to do. Like, find me a person who like is a numbers and pricing whiz, who can write beautifully, and also is a project manager and super organized and strategic. And also, like, you know, from the collaboration standpoint, like, these are so many different skill sets. And I feel like as a product marketer, you have to be good at all of those things, but everyone's going to have their area where they're self-conscious about.
Hey everyone, welcome to the Product Marketing Life podcast. My name is Colin Majak, lead PMM at Klassi. And today I sat down with Maggie Bean. Maggie is the co-founder of Product Marketing Therapy, a community content effort that allows product marketers to share and support one another in the difficulties they experience as people, not just as product marketers. And I really loved chatting with Maggie. It kind of felt like therapy for me, and hopefully it feels like that for you. Enjoy the episode. Hey, Maggie, thanks for coming on the podcast. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks so much for having me, Colin. I'm super excited to join you today. And congratulations on your new podcast host gig. That's so exciting.
Thank you. Yeah, it's been fun. I kind of am waiting for them, for Product Marketing Alliance, to like come up to me and be like, why do we let this guy do this? But so far, it's going okay.
I thought you were going to say, I've been waiting for Product Marketing Alliance to finally ask me to be a podcast host. And I was going to be like, that's really funny. You're just waiting around. You're like, why haven't they asked me yet?
My massive ego. It's like, I'm waiting for them to ask me to start hosting this podcast.
Yeah. No, but, you know, I think you're doing a great job so far from what I've listened to. So super excited to join you today.
Well, that is, as a fellow podcast host, that's incredibly kind of you. You know, I'm sad this is kind of our first time meeting, because I've been following you for a while, and I almost went to the PMA summit that I think you went to last year. Did you go to Austin?
Yeah. So I went to Austin this February, actually.
Oh, so like, yeah, 2 months ago. Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So no, I was thinking that I it would have been months back. So, okay. No near miss. We're meeting. How was that experience for you?
It was great. So I went as a media partner with PMA, which was really exciting. I felt very official. There was a baby kangaroo. I don't know why I have to say this.
Like a real one.
Real baby kangaroo. One of the vendors there brought baby kangaroos for people to hold. So I was like, you know, on top of meeting all of these great PMMs and all these sessions, I would have made this trip solely to hold a baby kangaroo. It was amazing. It was amazing. Like, I weirdly know so many PMMs in Austin, which is why I chose, including Ben Marullo, who is my co-founder of one of the products I'm working on, Product Marketing Therapy. So it was great to kind of like put, you know, faces, and voices, to the people that I, you know, talk to on LinkedIn all day. Yeah. As well as, you know, learn from all these great sessions. It just was really a great experience to have that kind of like in real life bonding with product marketers.
Yeah. I had this very similar experience where I went to the summit in SF in September. Mm-hmm. I walked in this room, and standing in a circle is Julian Sauvage from Clary, and then April Dunford and Jason Oakley. And I feel like I walked into this circle of like product marketing greats, and like, just here they are having a casual conversation. That trip for the networking alone, content was great, but for the networking alone for me was worth like every penny.
For sure. Yeah. It's really great. And the worst is when you kind of recognize somebody and then they kind of recognize you, and then they're looking at your name badge and they're like, wait, is this the person I think it is? And I'm just like, oh my God. I definitely, it was a great experience. I'm hoping to make it out to the Boston Summit this year, because I am a Boston.
It's your neighborhood.
My neighborhood. It's just down the street. So I'm really excited for that one as well.
So yeah, if anyone from PMA is listening, I want you to do a summit in Nashville. Mm-hmm. That's just, I'm gonna put my feelers out there, hoping this makes it happen. I want to talk about Product Marketing Therapy in a second, but before that, you had a project that you were running called New to Product Marketing, and we share kind of a similar hobby horse in that, like, I am kind of obsessive about helping people break into product marketing. Mm-hmm. What, like, why do you care about that? What was the thing that kind of like prompted that for you?
Yeah. So I think the kind of the genesis of New to PMM was that I was a new product marketer. So I had the idea for the podcast 2 months after breaking into product marketing. So,
Real fresh.
Yeah. So like product marketing specialist, had my first job at a startup. And I got the advice from one of the people working at the startup. So, and the startup I was working at as well, there was no product marketing leadership at the time. And I was really the only PMM, and it was a really tricky situation. And he suggested that I reach out to other product marketers on LinkedIn in the local community and just talk to them. So I sent out a bunch of requests, had some coffee breaks, and I was like, wow, these are such great conversations. Like, I wish that other people could gain as much, you know, insight from them as I am, just kind of learning directly from other people what product marketing is. Yeah. So that was when the idea struck. And then I think I more started it as a sense of not coming from a place of I am an expert and I want to help people break in, but more to build a community of other people who are early in their product marketing career that are like me. So that's kind of how it started, was more of just, this is, I am the target market for this, and bringing on experts who could speak to these topics, and I could kind of talk to the from the place of somebody who's new. And, you know, just as I've grown in my career, and I am no longer, you know, I'm almost 3 years in, I'm no longer super green and new to product marketing, just evolving, you know, my voice in the space and the content I create to evolve as where I am in my career journey and how I feel I can best use my voice to help the community.
Yeah. And I imagine that's sort of what has led you to product marketing therapy. Mm-hmm. What is product marketing therapy all about?
For sure. Give
the high level. I've been following it for a little bit. I was just subscribing to your Substack, but I would love to hear just for our guests.
Yeah. So, you know, speaking of evolving my, and we'll talk more about like my journey in product marketing, but I very much say, like, if you're a Taylor Swift person, like, I'm in my Reputation era as a product marketer. Yeah. I don't know if that reference hit for you at all, Colin, but I hope somebody out there giggled at that.
It'll hit for some.
So sorry, what?
I said it'll hit for someone.
It'll hit for someone. But basically, like, I think I was getting to a point where I was like, you know, it was just very, it's been very tricky for me, not only in my own career journey, but having such like direct contact with so many people who have recently broke into product marketing or breaking in, you know, seeing everybody get their first jobs and then a lot of them laid off from that first job and then, you know, repeating the cycle. It was just very clear that a lot of people in product marketing right now are struggling, specifically people who are in that, you know, APMM space to product marketing manager. And it was more just like, wow, I really don't see a hub for like to talk about these bigger issues that are impacting us. I see a lot of people expressing a lot of like vulnerability on LinkedIn, which I really love and I think people gravitate towards. But I was like, LinkedIn's not the perfect place to have those conversations because LinkedIn's kind of like a weird like hybrid of like a resume and like your spotless professional brand. I'm like, I just want to have just like our own little huddle area where we can kind of talk about the real stuff. And I'd been talking with my friend, Ben Marullo, who I actually met, like we met each other as we were both breaking into product marketing, like basically at the same time. And we're like, we really want to do a project together. Like, and he also has been very involved in the new to PMM community, like meeting with people, and he sees the same trends that I have. And we're like, you know what, we really think that this is the need right now. And this is where we can start creating some content. So that was how it was born. And then product marketing therapy, we call it like a community content initiative. It's like community sourced essays and stories about different topics that are like the big human challenges that product marketers face, like layoffs, anxiety, challenging bosses, things like that. So yeah.
Not that I've had any of those.
No, ever. I'm sure you can't relate to any of those things, nor can I. I have had, you know, just only stellar professional experiences, no struggles over here. So yeah, it's been great. It's been a good experience. We just put out our second edition, which has been on anxiety and self-doubt, actually working with an anonymous writer. So that has been very fun. I feel like I'm going to just like keep hitting you with like these like zillennial woman references, but it's like Bridgerton, like Lady Whistledown or like Gossip Girl. I just, I need to think, I don't know what you're into, Colin. Like, what are your, how can I adjust this metaphor?
Gosh, I feel like, I'm firmly in the millennial camp. I'm out of zillennial. And so I feel like you have to speak to me in like Harry Potter language.
Okay. I can do Harry Potter language.
2000s Disney is like an era that I grew up with. I feel like that's okay.
I'll make sure to adjust my metaphors.
MySpace. You've ever heard of MySpace?
Yeah. Okay. I'm a zillennial, like 96 baby. So like I'm on both ends. Like I love Harry Potter. I can talk in that space, but yeah, it's just kind of like being maybe the Rita Skeeter of like product marketing. I don't know. That's a bad, it's a bad one. I don't know if I want to brand this as that. Sorry, Ben. You know what I mean? Like just kind of be like, all right, what's really happening here?
Yeah. Yeah. I think what immediately drew me to product marketing therapy is, I mean, two things. One, the more I've met product marketers, people particularly who I've been following on LinkedIn, who have all these great thoughts, the more I'm less impressed with all the incredible things they have to say. That exists. That's out there. There's like, they're brilliant. But I'm consistently impressed with the people behind all these thoughts and theories on product marketing. I like that. And I secondly like that product marketing therapy has your kind of nod to the anonymity of it all. Because I feel like very rarely do you have any sort of content that comes from an anonymous lens. Mm-hmm. And it sort of feels like real therapy. In that sense, like,
for sure.
Like if you go in to your therapist's office, no one knows you're there. They have to keep everything anonymous, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. I imagine you get all sorts of then kind of raw, honest messages from product marketers. What are kind of some of the consistent problems or like pain points you're seeing PMMs face as people?
For sure. And, you know, I think it's a combination of messages, but also a lot of what I learned from doing my podcast. When I was doing New to PMM, the podcast, I was really focused on like the human element as well. Like what are people's challenges, their failures, their real stories. I also love Women in Product Marketing by Mary Sheehan. She always loves to focus on like the failures. And I think that it was then when I really started hearing the themes of dealing with perfectionism, imposter syndrome is a big one. I think just some of these issues I think are true to everybody in tech, but I think can really compound for product marketers just because of, you know, how demanding the role is, how cross-functional the role is. I think a lot is expected of product marketers that like there's not one person that I think is like the perfect product marketer that can be amazing and execute in all of the different areas that you need to do. Like find me a person who like is a numbers and pricing whiz, who can write beautifully and also is a project manager and super organized and strategic. Yeah. And also like, you know, from the collaboration standpoint, like these are so many different skill sets. And I feel like as a product marketer, you have to be good at all of those things, but everyone's going to have their area where they're self-conscious about, you know?
Oh, for sure.
So for me, it's numbers and reporting. And I'm good at it, but it's still something I'm self-conscious about. So for sure. Like I'm just like, anytime I see, you know, and I've been really having to work through that consciously, and I've been doing more pricing exercises and being, you know, more confident in that area. But I just think it can really fuel that. And then also, you know, we also have to be these product experts and stand up in front of everyone and be like, I'm this technical leader and this is how the product works and I'm a brand ambassador. And, you know, that's really stressful, like getting on these calls in front of the entire company and being like, you know, the voice of the product. Like,
yeah,
you have to be extremely confident in order to do that. And, you know, everybody struggles with that. So I just think it's like some of these things and of what's required of the role can bring that about. And then the last one I wanted to touch a little bit more on was the perfectionism. Just like, I think I that's just the one thing when I say like, oh, what have you been working on? People say, you know, letting people into the process before the product is completely finished, like holding on to things too tight. I don't know if that's ever happened to you where you're just like, oh my God, I have to have this like messaging perfect before anyone can see it. Like, is that something in your experience, like you've had as well?
Yeah. One of my pieces of feedback that I've had to work on is that they're like, Colin, you do incredible work. This is one of my quotes from my last boss. So you do incredible work. He's like, it kind of feels like though you go away into a cave and then you come back and you present this brilliant plan, this brilliant strategy. And I would love it if you brought us in sooner when it was imperfect and messy and that sort of thing. And so, yeah, no, for sure. And I think a lot of that does come from what you're talking about with this pressure to be good at a wide breadth of skills and the fear of being judged as not competent in one of those areas. Like what if it comes out that I'm actually not that great at data and analytics or I'm supposed to be the messaging whiz. Please don't attack my messaging too early. You're like, don't look at my, I always feel that like if I put a draft out there, I'm having to over qualify. Like this is a draft and it's still very much a work in progress.
Yeah, for sure.
Over qualify. Because I do think the bar feels, I mean, whether this is about more about my internal world rather than the reality, I'm not sure. But I'll tell you, the felt experience is that the bar for product marketers is really high and the pressure is very high. And so all that to say, I'm very guilty of trying to just make sure everything is perfect before I'm putting it in front of anyone. And that's kind of crushing. Like it's a heavy weight.
For sure. For sure. Like the feeling that you have to have it all together, you know, and I've really been struggling with this even recently. I think I am very much somebody that if you give me a goal, like I'm going to go and achieve that goal no matter what. And I will, you know, fully just do whatever I need to do internally to kind of make that happen. And I think sometimes you're in situations, especially as a product marketer, where you have all these different areas and, you know, in you might have different products you're working on and the people giving you tasks might not have full visibility to your bandwidth or what you're working on. And you have to be a person that's like, hey, I need more time on this, or I can't do this, or I need support in this way. And that has been very, very hard for me to learn. And I've definitely burnt myself out before doing that, of just being like, I can make it happen. Like, you know, but I think sometimes you have to be like, you know what, this situation is not something that's mine to, this is not my burden to carry. And like, I can't take all of this stress and just internalize it and make it my own responsibility. Sometimes you have to advocate for yourself and like get that support.
Now, that's helpful to hear. I mean, between you and I, and I guess everyone listening.
And everybody listening to this.
So I'm 3 weeks into a new role right now. And we're going to be launching some new products. One of our first products that I'm kind of owning is launching in May. And they probably should have brought someone on for this role 6 months ago. And I feel this pressure to get in there and just make it happen.
Yeah.
And am probably yes manning more than I should. And like, can you spin together this slide deck for it? Can you do the sales enablement? Can you hop on this customer call? And I'm like, I've been here for 3 weeks or like 7 days talking to our customer about an experiment we want to run. And there's probably something to be learned there. I think for me though, there is just a fear again, and maybe this is my own psychology, a fear that someone would hear me say, hey, I can't do that timeline that you're thinking or in the hope you're thinking, and like, oh, maybe we misfired on hiring Colin.
Yeah, for sure.
Not keeping up with the demands of the role or the demands of the job.
It's a really vulnerable time, like that first 90 days when you feel like people don't know you yet and that they have so little, you know, information to work off of that you feel like this is where they're forming their opinion of you. So it's a really hard balance for sure. But yeah, no, I totally relate to that. Like just feeling the need to have it all together. And I think in my case, I have very, I don't think this is like in the DSM, but high functioning anxiety. I read some articles last night to see if this is actually a term, and it really is.
Yeah.
But I
diagnose me. I'm ready for
for sure. So I overcompensate to the fact that I don't look stressed on the outside. I'm actually extremely cool under pressure in a scary way, but it is all happening like internally. And it's very funny because like I remember you're talking about like performance reviews, like one of my first like marketing roles, I was reporting up to our CMO. Actually, I was like somewhat his assistant, and we had our like self evaluation. I told him, I was like, you know, I was managing all these different events, and like some of these things were ambiguous, and it would have been better to have more direction here. I was just very stressed, and. Yeah. He sat me down in my review and he's like, I'm going to be honest, Maggie, I could have never guessed that you were stressed. Like I would have never thought that. Like, I'm not the person that people are going to run to and be like, wow, she's really having a hard time right now. You know, she's really struggling because my coping mechanism is just like scary, like whatever. Yeah. But that doesn't mean, you know, there's a boiling point for everybody where that doesn't work anymore. And you can't bottle up all that stress and just keep going. Yeah. So you need to take care of yourself and ask for support and break through that. Like, I need to be perfect. Yeah. I can't show weak points.
Yeah.
So
that's, I mean, I think you can diagnose me with the same thing. So like I recently resigned from a role. Mm-hmm. And something I said in my resignation was, this was the most stressful work experience I've ever had. And I don't think that leader was anticipating hearing that.
Yeah.
Because I just delivered, like I just got stuff done, but like, I'm finishing up my work day and my wife has experienced that. I'm like, she's like, you're really tense. Mm-hmm. Like, and it's like, we close the laptop and I walk away and I'm really like pretty stressed, like verging on like anxiety attacks. And I think for me, so much of it is rooted in a fear of that vulnerability of being perceived as weak and unable to keep up with the demands. And it's hard because I think this is what I want to ask you about, because you talk about being vulnerable and authentic. Mm-hmm. And I think as a millennial who likes Brené Brown, I'm like, yes, I love it.
Love her.
But then, I love her. She's amazing. But then I have this part of me that is like, not at work. Mm-hmm. That's like, it's because it's risky. And like, contrary to like that we're all a family or like, hey, we care about you as a person. There's a lot of hiring and work practice that is evidence to the contrary. And there isn't always room for authenticity and vulnerability. And so I'd be curious, what do you mean when you say vulnerability, particularly like, how do you do vulnerability under the reality of like a professional work expectations there?
Yeah, I think that's really what we're trying to figure out right now. I think in the LinkedIn sphere, I think I've seen a lot of LinkedIn's, you know, posts. I don't know if it's just my feed, like evolving over the past few years, like especially after, you know, everybody went remote in the pandemic and we had all of this kind of collective trauma happening to us at the same time. Like I just, and also, you know, work suddenly became our homes, and that kind of divide between our work self and our personal self really, you know, shifted. And you see people's kids and their dogs on the screen, and they're in their bedroom. So I just think there's a real like rethinking of what that personal to professional balance is.
Yeah.
And it's been really funny for me because I feel like I've had like a Benjamin Button like experience professionally, because for context, I, in college, I did student government. I was wearing business casual, like a blazer, every single day of my senior year because I was in student government and like in important meetings, quote unquote, every day. And then I got a job in higher ed and same thing. Like I had my own office. I was literally 22, you know, working with a bunch of people with like PhDs who like didn't take me seriously and just felt like I needed to show up as this like uber professional person who's like dressed like literally again, like the blazer and the full like business, you know. And then I broke into tech and just everything kind of changed for me. And then just, I think it's a totally different world, right? I think like you said, tech is kind of weird because it's this strange thing of like the whole, we're all family and it's casual and everyone wears hoodies. And that, like you said, can kind of be a little bit of a facade and like not actually genuine. Like at the end of the day, it's still work. But I feel like I felt more openness to that and bringing myself to work after breaking into this industry, just because I feel like it felt like I could be myself at work.
Yeah.
But then again, it's easy bringing the good parts of yourself to work and being silly and like using emojis on LinkedIn and, you know,
and the social
posting memes and like, I am fully like, I love that. And I've always kind of been like that on LinkedIn, just really kind of pushing against the fact that like, there's one way to be professional, but now we're kind of to the final phase of that is like, all right, what about the challenging stuff? Like, what about the warts? You know, we can all be silly now on LinkedIn and that's evolved, but like, how do we engage and discuss challenges in a way that's still safe? And like, you know, it's still your professional sphere. And I know, you know, people go on my LinkedIn and that's how they view me professionally. So I just think it's all about finding your personal balance and what feels good for you. And then also, you know, what we're trying to do with PMM therapy is having this third space where people can go to, or, you know, PMA, the conferences we were talking about, like going and meeting people in person and having these conversations, these like human conversations. I had this amazing conversation with this group of women at the PMA conference in Austin. It just happened to be like nine of us around a table. And we just started talking about like what it was like being a woman in tech, different generations of women, and just this super honest, really candid conversation. Yeah. And it's that kind of, you have to seek out those spaces where you can lean on other people and have these vulnerable conversations. Because maybe it isn't LinkedIn, you know, like I'm not saying like go and trauma dump on LinkedIn.
I mean, I love LinkedIn.
I love LinkedIn too. And you can trauma dump on LinkedIn if you want to like live your life. But I think that's not necessarily the answer. I think it's more forming genuine relationships with people, figuring out who you can lean on, building your support network outside of work as well. And through community. And that's like, I'd say probably the best you can do.
Yeah. No, I mean, a couple things stand out. I think first, I hope you're right overall in that the cultural tide is shifting. And it seems like we're getting some early indicators of that, but I hope it goes beyond, like you were saying, like I get to wear a hoodie and here's my dog. Mm-hmm. I hope it does move to a point where there would be room for what gets classified as like negative emotions. Or I think of the idea of coming to work as your whole self. Like for me, the thing I don't say, and like if I've talked about this before, like if someone interviews me and they say, "Hey, what's your why?" Mm-hmm. I'm probably going to say something that really transfers nicely to me being an excellent employee.
Exactly.
In reality, my why is my wife and my two kids outside and trying to build a beautiful life for them. Mm-hmm. And I'm hoping we get to a point where that would be as equally acceptable of an answer. And I'm not sure. I'm not sure if it will be. I think I still, in my head, hold a certain line of professionalism. I don't even know if I could articulate it. But there are things I'll say publicly or on LinkedIn or in a work meeting that I feel fine with, and things that I still kind of keep close. Like even yesterday, to your trauma dump on LinkedIn, I sort of trauma dump about layoffs on LinkedIn, and it clearly resonated with people. Like mm-hmm. it was one of the best like performing posts in a long time. But even I second guess, like, is this appropriate? Like, is this something I really should share publicly? I don't know. That's a work in process. But the second thing I really liked is I think you're right that because there's a certain inevitability about what you can and can't share at work, mm-hmm. establishing those third spaces where you can be really honest and really vulnerable with people who understand you. Like, I mean, the product marketing summits that you were just talking about, that's a great example. For me, do you know the podcast We're Not Marketers?
Yes. So Zach Roberts was my first guest on New to PMM.
Oh, he was.
Yeah. So big Zach fan.
Great. Zach is wonderful. I like all the We're Not Marketers boys. And I'm in like a LinkedIn message thread with them. And I feel like that thread is my place or our place to like blow off steam. Mm-hmm. And in a way that I don't think it's like negative. I think it's just human. Like we can actually talk about what's hard and what's painful and kind of frustrations with work. And I think those friendships have proven friendships like that one, where it's like, this is someone who like knows my world really well. They've done it.
Yep.
They're not my boss. They're not going to become my boss. Probably they're not in my company. That's how you survive. I think is having.
Yeah,
those
for sure. You need that network. And that's really like Ben, my co-founder of PMM Therapy. Like we are that for each other. Like we have a monthly talk. I have called him in certain situations where I'm like, dude, like, how do I navigate this? And it's from a peer-to-peer, you know, lens. Like, it's like how you would give advice to a friend. It's not necessarily that I'm any farther along than him and I know more than him about a situation, but it's like, yeah, this is how I would tackle it. That's that third party that really knows the specific situation. Like, you have to find your people like that if you're going to, like, survive.
Yeah. So I've been in therapy for years. Big fan. Real, mm-hmm. real. Just to clarify for those not listening, Maggie is not a therapist.
I'm not a therapist. I'm not a therapist.
Get a real therapist.
For sure.
But something my current actual therapist does really well is try to take an incredibly practical approach to whatever I'm dealing with. So if I'm feeling depressed, he's going to ask about my sleep and my exercise and whether I'm having time with friends. There's this like attention to the essentials. And while I recognize, again, you're not a licensed therapist, I'd be curious what we talked already about, like having that third space. What are some other essentials that you would recommend to product marketers who are just simply trying to take care of themselves under the pressure they're feeling?
I think there's a real untangling you need to do between your personal value and your professional output. I think that's extremely important. Like, I think if you're realizing you're taking this stress home with you at the end of the day too much, and it's really, you know, that line is boring for you and it's really affecting you as a person. Yeah. I think it's important to be reflecting on things like that and looking for those warning signs. And, you know, I can always see it happening for me, like as I start a job and I just start to get into the thick of it. Like at first it's fine. I can go home and have a great night's sleep and not have work stress dreams. And then as the months go on, you just start picking up and like becoming entrenched and all of
not
a sudden that
stress dreams.
Oh, I'm a big stress dream girl. So, I think just knowing yourself, knowing your patterns. I also think there's something to be said of setting yourself up for success for roles. And I think that's really something you can only learn through trial and error. Like when I was taking my first jobs, like I didn't know what was going to be right for me or what I needed out of a role and out of a manager and out of a company. And I feel like every time I move to a new company, you kind of bring those things with you, like just really being intentional, about certain things. And obviously this job market, it's really hard, to even find one job and, rather than be cheesy, but I do think you should have deal breakers, at least one or two professionally of like, this is an environment I know I'm not going to be successful in, because once you're in that environment, it can set you back and just really affect you, you know, as a person. So I think that's big. So that's kind of like in the preparation stage. But then I just think like in the, when it comes to that untangling of your work and your personal self, I think really growing as a person and trying new things outside of work as well. I am from Boston. One thing I notice is like people on the East Coast tend to be like their work kind of like is their identity, and like they don't really have like soup. This is a very broad brush, but like I don't think the culture, like when you go to a party in Boston, you're like, oh, what do? Where do you work? Like, are you in, like, how many days do you go into the office? Like, that's the talk track. But when I would visit the West Coast, people would be like, oh, yeah, I work at Microsoft and I salsa dance. Like, you know what I mean? Like, or I'm in an improv troupe. Like, I just think that's a little, like, that's not really the norm here. So this year I made a big emphasis on doing, like, trying new things outside of work and kind of shifting my attention there as well. I've taken up yoga, which has been very cliche, but amazing. I also got back into Irish step dancing because I did it as a kid. So that has been really fun. I hadn't done it in like 15 years. So that's been amazing. Like just having these different outlets for yourself where you can just like establish your personhood outside of what you're doing at work. I think that's part of it, just like disentangling. And then just, I think it's just making connections with people and having your support people, having your support system, your friends. You know, my partner has been amazing. He works in the mental health field, so it's been very helpful because he knows how to deal with very stressed out and anxious people.
Practical take, data therapist, got it.
Yeah, exactly. So, but it's also been helpful because he's just like not in tech and totally has this like external, like you have to, you're people that you're not talking shop with, right? And I have a good mix of that in my friends, of your people you can relate on work stuff, but then also people that you're talking about, you know, different things as well. So I just think, you know, your support people. And then, I think those are probably the most important things I would say. But I really empathize with anybody who's struggling. And I think every situation, like you, just like my advice to them is like, you are not forever going to be in the situation that you currently are if you're struggling. Like you will find your way out. You'll find a solution that works for you. You will be in a new job eventually, you know, like it's just, there is a way out of it. And this is a temporary situation. Because I think when you're in a tricky situation, it can feel very all encompassing and like I'm stuck and this is my forever, and just be really overwhelming. And I just think it's really important to say like, that is not the case.
Yeah. The thread, thank you for sharing that. And, you know, the thread I'm sort of hearing you say through all of this is this like healthy level of detachment from your work. Mm-hmm. And it's hard because that over enmeshment with me and my work being one and the same gets rewarded in the workplace.
Yes.
Like if you're really like, it ends up making you probably pretty exceptional at your job, but it is the number one, I think in my mind, like source of also suffering associated with work. Mm-hmm. If I am my job, my mark of success in my life is that I'm killing it in this role. I'm getting the raise. I'm getting the promotion. The launch goes well, whatever it may be. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's hard to turn that off when I know for me, like personally, like you want to talk about my emotional strategy for navigating life, achievement and tying myself to work has been a way I've coped. Mm-hmm. And the choice to detach yourself takes like crazy amounts of intention.
For sure.
No, that's helpful. And I'm not sure there's one formula for that.
And I think too, like what does achievement look like to you and what can it look like on your own terms outside of work? Like I love a side project. for just a passion project. Like, I'm not a side hustle person of like, what can I do to like make me more money? It's more just like, what can I do where I really like the idea and I think it will help people? Like, how can you channel those superpower energies into something that's like doing good in the world instead of something that, you know, is just your job? So it's just kind of, it's really hard though. But I think it's not just like, you still can get that kind of satisfaction from achievement. That doesn't necessarily have to be from your like day job.
Yeah. No, that's super helpful. Well, Maggie, thank you for coming on the show and for kind of giving me a little bit of a product marketing therapy session.
You're welcome. Maybe I should like get my master's in this. Like, maybe I should be a therapist. I don't know.
Yeah, there you go.
There you go. Maybe not. Definitely not.
That'd be a very high involvement side hustle.
Oh yeah. No, definitely not.
So if people want to keep up with you and what you're up to with product marketing therapy, where can they find you?
For sure. So, definitely on LinkedIn. I don't love posting there, but I post there sometimes and you can always message me and say hi. That's probably preferable. And then also on product marketing therapy, on Substack. So you can come say hi there. But yeah, those are probably the two best ways, to get in contact and would love to, you know, connect with you.
If people follow you on LinkedIn, can they anticipate a video of the Irish dancing you spoke of earlier?
Definitely not. Like, absolutely not. That's never seen the light of day. But I mean, maybe if I reach 1 million followers, I will. Okay. That's the goal. 1 million. Yeah. 1 million followers, I will release a video of me.
You break dancing. LinkedIn, essentially. Yeah,
yes, I'll break LinkedIn problem. With that. Yeah, it's a good goal.
Yeah, well, thanks again, Maggie. Appreciate it.
Of course.
For everyone still tuned in, thanks so much for listening. And if you enjoyed the podcast, please help us spread the word to other product marketers. Before we leave you to get on with your day, if you want to get involved, here are a few ways you can. If you're a product marketer and want to come on the show and speak about your day, a specific topic, or your role in general, that's one option. If you want to flex your podcast hosting skills, being a guest host is another. And finally, if you or your company want to sponsor an episode, there's a third. Thanks again and have a great morning, afternoon, or evening, wherever you are.